Here we go. Green flag waves. Here in Qatar, it's the Tissot Grand Prix of Doha. Chapter 2, round 2. We're underway. Solid start from pole. Even though he's got a wheelie, but Martin is flying through. Look at the...
Hello and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 657. I'm, of course, one of your hosts, Scott Evercoy, and joining me as ever is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, dude?
It's good. I'm back home. I'm actually at my desk with my mic and all the good stuff. So I'm not trying to do this on the road for the first time in how long, right? So that's going to be good. I learned one thing the past few weeks. Don't try working on BMWs. They're very difficult to replace parts on. Mm-mm. Don't do that, people. Anybody
very over-engineered, too. Let's put 15 bolts in for an 8-inch oil pan. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Don't ever try to replace the wheel bearings in the back of your BMW. They're very difficult. I right now could scream and want to go find anybody who had anything to design that car and tell them what I think about their engineering. But hey, we have racing. We have cracking racing. I mean, this racing this week was fantastic. These are races you show your friends as to why you watch MotoGP.
Absolutely. So. We shook it up this year. So, you know, you mentioned you're back at your desk and with the microphone, which is always comfort in being on the road and trying to work with like one screen and a laptop on your lap and trying to find a quiet place somewhere. And, you know, I'm actually moved my desk into what was formerly the kids' room because he's not old enough to use anything in here and he's sleeping with us. So I was like, I'm just going to move my desk into his room. So now I'm back at my desk. I'm not stuck in the closet anymore. I'm back to having my full setup now where I can actually use the microphone that I have for the show. I haven't even been able to do that even when I was sitting in the back room because I was using my headset. So hopefully things come back a little smoother. I did forget to bring in the blankets to throw on the floor because we have hardwood in here. And so typically I'll throw blankets on the floor and it absorbs a lot of the echo. But I forgot to do that. So I'll probably have to clean this up a little bit. But hey, it's good to be back at the desk. And also, it's good to be back. Now, I have a beer here, Jim. It's open, so the show is going to get wild from the get-go.
Start now, your stopwatches, people. You got 15 minutes before Skylar goes crazy.
I don't think it's 15 minutes, but the...
Oh, being generous, you haven't had one in a while.
You know, this is true. So with this beer here, the reason I'm having it today is that it's the anniversary of the passing of my father-in-law, so we always do a toast to him on his day, and so we have a beer... my wife has some, and we do a little toast to him and one of our friends that is passed away as well. And so this is, I bring out the good stuff whenever we do this. And this is my favorite beer, and it's called the Confused Therapist. I think I've had this one on the show before. And it's always great because it's no appointment necessary, but it's a real strong beer. So I'm going to get very opinionated today because it's a 10.4%. And this is one pint. So we'll see how Moto 3 gets when I get there. I think Jim is going to be leading most of this, and I'll just be chiming in with antics.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's going to be good. So why don't we just kind of like get into this, my man?
Right, because again, it's not really news. The racing is the news. We haven't got to that part of the year yet where there's much to talk about.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that we'll talk about for news. I mean, first of all, though, I think we need to discuss the listener feedback that we got. Gary Chavit has written in again to the show. Appreciate it, Gary. He leads us, going to lead us off, and he says, "Hi, guys. Have to stick in my 2 cents because everyone seems to be missing a very important issue. MotoGP champions are not born. They learn to become champions in Moto 3 or Moto 2. The only exception is Casey Stoner, who I'm sure almost everyone will agree was a black swan. Don't say Nicky Hayden, too, because he was AMA Superbike champ against Matt Mladen, who won 3 consecutive championships before Nicky and 3 consecutive championships after Nicky. To win a championship, of course, you need talent, but all the guys out there have talent. Then you also need to learn how to win races, and a lot of the riders learn that. But to put together a championship year, you need to have to learn to make the best of a bad weekend and make even more of a good weekend. It's a mental thing. To add to this point, look who won the championship last year, the veteran Suzuki rider or the newer ex-champ Suzuki rider. So the way I see it, Yamaha has one rider too old to be champion and 3 riders too old to learn to be champions. Ducati has 3 champions and Miller, who could be a new Stoner. For me, that gives Ducati a gigantic edge over Yamaha. Of course, the big question is Mark's fitness when he returns. No one knows, but everyone can agree that it will be the factor in determining how the season pans out. Gary, thanks for writing in. Skyler, what do you think of Gary's letter?
I think Gary has favorites in MotoGP because factually wise, it's not correct. Saying that Yamaha has one rider who's too old for championship, I agree with. Saying that they have three that are too old and then comparing that to Ducati. So let's take a little look-see here, shall we? So they have Morbidelli at 26. They have Vinales at 26. And they have Quartararo at 21. Quartararo is actually the youngest guy on the grid, right there with Iker Lecuona. I think Iker Lecuona has been beat by 2 months. So to say they have someone who's too old to learn to be a champion, who's just now stepped up into the factory team because he's been winning races and getting better. Sure, the back half of last year wasn't that good, but he's also kind of come out of nowhere. If anyone is going to be the stoner, it's Quartararo. He's the guy that no one really thought was going to do something, and now he's on the factory ride, and he's dangerous. To say Jack Miller might be the new stoner, that shit sailed a while ago to be that comparison. He's 26, so he should have been able to wrap the championship now. And to say that he's better than Vinales at this point, it's kind of ludicrous because Maverick has more wins than Miller has entirely. And Maverick does get crapped on, and he will get crapped on a lot by this show, but he wins races every year. And he goes out there and does his thing. And then the other three riders for Ducati, Zarco's 30. So I don't know where he's getting that other age from. You've got Marini. He's unproven. He hasn't won any championships. So champions are made again, like, people coming in, so okay. I don't know where that argument's at either. And then we've got Bagnaia at 24, and he's unproven as well. Now, they have speed, and they've got promise, but I would not say that they're all of a sudden way more loaded than Yamaha because of a few years, two, three at the most. And they're not even, they're all older than Quartararo. I'm sorry, man, I just can't agree with that. And then, yeah, Mir did win the season championship over his teammate, which is a good challenge. And I would say most people would agree that Mir at this point is the better rider. But then Alex Rins also did miss quite a few races due to injury and wasn't 100% in the beginning, which maybe if he had a better start to his season, he could have been right there with his teammate at the end battling for the championship, which he kind of was. So he's not that great of a rider over his teammate. So I don't know, man. I don't really see this argument holding much water. This sounds like he's a Ducati fan and especially a Miller fan, and he's not real big on the Yamaha guys, and he used to be a Rossi fan that's converted. So that's just how I look at that one.
That's interesting. So I have the opposing viewpoint. I see it a little differently. First of all, I will agree that Yamaha does have one rider that is too old to win the championship. That is Rossi. Rossi's ship has sailed. I've said it before on this show. Rossi's ship sailed a long time ago. I can't tell the man when to retire, and the legend that he is, he pulls enough weight that he can have a bike for probably as long as he wants to actually throw a leg over it. No one wants to be the guy who tells this 9-time world champion that you need to stop because you're just not fast enough anymore. However, Rossi's coming to a point where I think he's even beginning to realize that he is no longer as fast as he used to be. Rossi's 42 years old now. Father Time wins every round, and I think it's just time for Rossi to be a team manager and have his teams, and he's set himself up for that. Okay, so let's move past that point of it. Let's get back to the point that where MotoGP champions are not born. They learn to be champions. I agree with Gary to the extent that you need to learn how to get the maximum out of the equipment that you have been given race after race after race after race. You need to learn how to deal with the inconsistencies that are the tires or the setup that you can't possibly find and go on from there. Like we said when Mir was winning, not when he was winning races, but last year when he was leading the championship, hey, he started 10th. He would have a champion's ride to be able to get to the front, to get near the podium. That's what champions do. Okay, that is a learned concept and a learned construct. But I will put this forth. All of the people that you named that were world champions prior, would you not agree? And I'll ask this of you, Skyler. Would you not agree that all of those guys were born with talent that was just that little bit better than everyone else on the grid.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of those things, if you want to get a, as a physiological thing, is spatial awareness. That is a sense that your body has, and balance at that, right? And you need to have a great sense of where your body is at all time, and you need to have an incredible sense of balance to be able to be a great motorcycle rider. And that is not spread equally between person to person.
Correct. So while you got to learn how to be a champion, I think that they're also that the people who are champions are just that little cut above everybody else. Everybody who's on that grid in MotoGP is a fantastic rider. None of them, all of them would run circles around almost everyone else in the world, except for they happen to be with the other 21 other guys who happen to be just as good as them. And you see just how different it is. Now, when you get to the fact that you're talking about like Quartararo and Vinales and those guys and this mental aspect, yes, there is a mental component to the Yamaha guys. We've been over this before on the show. Vinales, if things aren't right, he will throw the toys out of the pram and go prancing off into the corner. You can't do that. That is part of the mental challenge of learning or being a champion. You don't go, "Woe is me, and I can't do this," and blah, and you're never going to go anywhere with it. You didn't see Wayne Rainey pouting in a corner. You didn't, and he rode probably arguably one of the worst Yamahas that was ever around and still won races on it, to the point that even Kenny Roberts told him, "You got two things. You either shut up talking about how bad the bike is, or you quit winning on it because they're not going to do anything about it because you keep winning on it," which, okay. So there's that whole mental part of it. Stoner was always me against the world. That's the Aussie thing, the Aussie nature. I mean, that's how they are. So the cool one was Quartararo. Now, Quartararo, I agree, had some times last year where he definitely did not have his mind in the game, but he was dealing with a pressure that we probably can't relate to. He was the kid that came really out of nowhere from Moto. He was the next coming in Moto 3, right? Quartararo was supposed to be everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was really nothing and didn't do anything on a Moto 3 bike, and everyone sort of poo-pooed it. He moved to Moto 2, won two races on a bike that occasionally the setup is correct, and he went crazy on it. And then, boom, he winds up with a MotoGP ride. And suddenly he looked magical on a motorcycle. It just happens. He just was there at the time. Now he's dealing with the other struggles that maybe he did not know how to deal with in Moto2 or Moto3. But I give you that he may not have won championships there, but he learned how to struggle with that bike, the speed up at the time, right? So he definitely knew what was going on there, but now he's in a different headspace because he was going to the factory team. He knew he was going to the factory team. He was given a factory bike last year, even though he was in the satellite team. Is that right? Yeah, he had a factory bike. Mm-hmm. Even though he was in a satellite team, that's a whole nother level of pressure that I think he needed to learn how to do. He even made the comments after the race this weekend about how he needed to reset his mind and put himself back straight again. So I think that he can. Like, I get where Gary's coming from, and I think I understand what he's trying to say, but some of what's there is, as you said, not exactly true. But Gary's entitled to his opinion, just like we have our opinion.
That's right.
But you know, I agree with him because the one thing that he hit on that I think this season is completely dependent upon is, when does Marquez return and how fit is he? Because that is going to be the X factor of crazy that is going to be the season of 2021. If he shows back up at Portimao and he's even remotely fast on the motorcycle, oh my goodness, is this going to be crazy.
Right.
It's already crazy. So
I mean, Marquez sets the bar and the next three steps below it at this point. No one else has. I mean, these guys had to do everything perfect to beat him when he's almost perfect. That's how you beat him. You don't beat him when he's perfect. When they have the bike set up for him and he's on his game, you're not beating him. There's just no one that's shown that yet, right? In order to prove that, you have to do it week in and week out, and that's not that right now. So when he comes back, we're going to find out real quick if what we're seeing is legit or it was an interim king.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So I think that pretty much covers it. Gary, thanks for writing in. Appreciate it. If you want to talk to the write in and tell us what we do right, do wrong, or throw comments out there like Gary has, just send an email to motopod@motopodcast.com.
That's right. And also, Gary, we encourage you for a rebuttal as well. Remember, this is a conversation on podcast. No one is right or wrong. We just like to have our opinions because we all do this for free. And let's be real, we're armchair racers. That's all it is.
That's
except
true.
For Jim. Jim actually did race, so he can weigh that a little more.
Okay. It was club at its, it was club at its weakest. I'm like, I told you
he
once,
said
I told
club
you twice.
At his weakest.
Yes. I told you all once, right. I told you twice, man. If when I showed up trying to qualify for an AMA super sport race, those guys were in a different zip code than me, okay?
Man.
So anyway, all right. So now that we've all laughed at ourselves, we're all good now. Quickly, some news. Miller did go in for arm pump surgery. It was done by Dr. Mir. It was determined to be a success, so he's on the mend from that. And another thing, this is just for you guys to do. If you haven't read it already, please go do it. It is a great Michelin tire article by Matt Oxley over on Motorsports Magazine. It is super in-depth as to what is going on with the tires and why we're having all this talk about tires and all that stuff. It's really well summarized, well laid out. He's a professional rider, so he should do that right. He also worked in the paddock for numerous years. So it's a great article. Go read it, guys, because it's everything you really need to know. And with that, I guess we're going to kind of roll on into the qualifying for the MotoGP race. Why not, right?
That's right. We got a little flipped around again. So we're going to see how this goes during the show. We want to make sure that we always have enough time for MotoGP because that's the big boys. And then we kind of walk our way back. So we'll just like the last episode. Oh, man, this beer is making me burp like crazy. The most unprofessional
thing. You're already
thing
in there
drink.
Now, huh?
Nah, it's just that I've been doing the hard swallows instead of sipping it like I should. So I'm trying to get it in between takes and just like, duh, as we go.
I know when I'm walking, you know when I'm talking, it's going to be a while, so don't worry about it.
And this is anyway, true.
I get on a rant sometimes. Anyway, MotoGP qualifying in QP1. Oliveira, Mir, again, the defending world champion, cannot figure out how to make that Suzuki go fast on a soft rear tire. Rossi, Nakagami, Binder, Pol Espargaro. Such is the depth of the field in MotoGP that these guys, who were all winners last year, except Rossi, Rossi and Nakagami and Pol, are there. But these are guys that we expect to be at the front and be faster than they are.
I have a proposition for you.
Okay.
Would you agree that because of how talented MotoGP is, every single rider will start in Q2 at least once this season? Or excuse me, wait, I got that backwards, right? Q1. They will all have to be in Q1 at least one time this season. Every rider.
All of them?
All of them.
Ooh.
I mean, everyone has their bad day, and I can't see. The only person that we used to say would be Marquez wouldn't do that, but Marquez has been back there once or twice, too, just because something doesn't go right on a Saturday.
Wow, that's I would like to say that you're right, but something tells me you won't be, and I don't know what that is. Let's keep track of that.
Yeah,
that is a stat that we need to keep track of. Like, who has not gone through Q1, or will everybody
the
have
qualifying championship?
It's what it's becoming. Like I said, you got to be on the first two rows if you want to win a MotoGP race. You pretty much got to be on the first two rows. Anyway, so as they go through or whatever, the qualifying there, it's really the last lap was what it was going to be. Mir was always hanging around there, but he never did get it until he got in on his last lap. So Mir and Oliveira, and basically Oliveira came from nowhere. He wasn't near the front at all, and those two go through. So Oliveira strung something together there at the end just to get himself through. When we got into MotoGP qualifying round two, we really knew that this was going to become a Ducati kind of a thing, and it was. But it wasn't the Ducati you thought it was going to be. Martin was on top after everybody had made one run. It was a spectacular lap. The kid obviously has adapted to the big bike and has shown that he can definitely get it done. But he was really closely followed by Quartararo. Elation on the Aprilia, then Morbidelli having a much better qualifying this time. Bagnaia, Miller, they were there. Then as it came down, it was like red helmets, red helmets, red helmets. People are going faster. Where was it going to shape up? Well, it became at the end. It was Martin who was fast enough. He held off Johann Zarco, his teammate, Vinales put in a cracker of a lap to be on the front row. Miller came in at in the fourth spot. Quartararo was fifth. Then we had Bagnaia. Aleix on the Aprilia. When is Salvadore going to be replaced by Dovizioso?
I said
by
it was what round? Four races, right? That's what I gave it. Four races.
You gave it four races.
I think it was. If I didn't, I'm saying it now. If I didn't say it last year, by round after round four, we're gonna see old Dovizioso come pop up because the next round, he'll be in the paddock. No. The next round, he'll be there walking around.
He'll be there.
And that's gonna start it. Right? And then three, he's gonna show up, and then they might throw him out there for like a Friday test or a wild card or something. And then by round four, if Salvadori don't do it, let's see. Let's take a look. We can actually do better than this, Jim.
You can do better than this?
We can do better than this because what we can do is
I'm thinking straight up. If Aleix can qualify in the top two rows at Portimao and he finishes top six, Dovizioso will be on that bike. That's what I'm thinking for the next race.
All right. Let's see.
What do you got there?
I'm interested because what I want to do here. Okay, let's see. We got round one is done. Two, three, four, five. I guarantee round six he's on the bike. This is why. It's in Italy.
Mm.
Round six is Italy. It's guaranteed he's there by then. If anything, he's wild carding there for sure, and then does so well they just bump him over into Barcelona in the next round. So there you go. So Dovizioso gets in after the first quarter of the season.
I'll say it again. If the Aprilia is good at Portimao, done deal. Dovizioso's on the bike at the next one. Anyway, so where were we? Oh, Aleix was seventh. Rins was eighth. Mir was ninth, having come through the Q1 session. Then Morbidelli, Brodel, and Oliveira rounding it out. Now, Oliveira only ran one qualifying session, basically because he really didn't have any more tires to throw on the bike, basically. Now, there is a rule now where if you come through Q1, you are giving another soft front and soft rear tire for the race, but you don't get those for qualifying. So, basically, that's where it started. Then, we move on to the actual MotoGP race. So, the interesting part was that all the KTMs started on the medium front, which is the tire that nobody liked at all. The hard was only there for the daytime running of practice when the temperatures were very, very hot. The medium was an asymmetric medium front, and it had a K compound and an H compound. And the K compound is way softer than the H compound on that side. So Alex Marquez was telling us that it was very different. And you, as you crossed over and leaned one way back to the other way, you had to be sure about what you were doing. So for the KTMs to all decide to go onto that tire was a bit of a crazy thing, but they had to. According to Brad Binder, they had to go to that tire because there was no way they were going to make the distance on the soft tire. So we lined them up 22 laps in the desert under the lights. Martin had another spectacular hole shot. He had what? 0.3 on everybody by the first two corners. I mean, the Ducati is a rocket ship off the line with him at the helm. No question about that. After him, it was his teammate Zarco. Aleix had a rocket start to come up for third. Oliveira on an incredibly amazing start too. He looked like Martin last year coming from, he was on the fourth row and came up to be right there running in the top. Then Rins and Mir. And then the Yamahas fell back to 8th and 9th. So Quartararo and Vinales are going towards the back. Mir got mugged by Quartararo at the first turn, and that pushed Mir back. The race was pretty much Martin, Zarco, and then everybody behind is kind of changing up where they are, where they're going to be. What was interesting was how close the Suzukis had gotten to the front early on. So Oliveira fades off. He goes backwards. Mir and Rins sort of went forwards. Those guys were riding really well on the Suzukis, and they knew that they had to do something. Now, Aleix was running very well, but Rins put the move on to Aleix, and so did Mir. They both came through. But Rins and Zarco started to really bang on each other. Rins knew he needed to get to the front to ride with the Ducatis and to stay with them. Zarco, as Simon Crafer pointed out to us at the beginning of the race, Ducati could not do the same strategy that they had last weekend. They could not just try to motor out front every time and motor away. They were going to burn up the tires. They don't. It's a thirsty track, fuel consumption, etc. But basically, they were using up the tires. Their only goal was to try to draft back by the Yamahas, the Suzukis, and then block their lines as they were going through the corners. And every time that an inline four would push past in the twistier, tighter sections of, like, say, Section 2 and Sector 3, the Ducatis would have to fight back in Sector 4 and in Sector 1. That was what was happening. So this is this ding-dong battle that goes on between Rins and Zarco, just back, forth, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. It's becoming it's becoming quite the battle. We get about 15 laps to go, and Miller has gotten by both Aleix Espargaró and Mir. So now Miller's coming forward on the Ducati because he was back about sixth place. And so was Bagnaia. They're there. They're kind of coming forward. Then we realize that Vinales has suddenly become the fastest man on track. Now, maybe this is looking like a repeat. Maybe the Yamahas were going to saving the rear tire, needed to think about what they wanted to do. But he was definitely fast and was trying to move towards the front. And Rins was his fastest. And he was, you know, saving up the – had a great save on the front because he was – really quick into the first turn and just about lost it. But the Ducatis, regardless of what was happening, the Ducatis were staying up front. The pace that Martin was running was a significantly reduced pace from the last time, from last weekend. So the Ducatis were not fading. It was up to Mir, it was up to Miller, it was up to everybody else to try to figure out their ways to the front and with Vinales. So it was basically, you know, we get to the point where we wind up with the Miller and the Mir run-ins with each other. So it starts out with the fact that now Mir is trying to get to the front. Miller has gotten by him. So Mir sort of bangs his way past Miller on the way into turn 10. He puts a boot up, kind of like, hey, sorry, that was a little bit rough, but I didn't really mean it. But look, I had to go for it. Now, is that move too much, Skyler?
No, I've seen worse. I mean, I think that's motorcycle racing. Technically, we're not supposed to say rubbins racing, right? Because it's not. Correct. There's no bumpers to be rubbing with. But I didn't see anything egregious. I definitely saw that it was a lunge. I will say that it was that, and the fact that he apologized, he knew it was like, all right, man, that might have been a little ballsy. But this is top level racing. This is aggressive. This is what the moves you have to try to make, especially when there's such a clear disadvantage in a straight line.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think everybody knew that that's how the Suzukis had to race. I looked at it. I agree. It was a lunge. I've done that shit too. You know what? Mir knew it. Nobody was off. He did push Miller a little bit wide. Hey, a boot to the side. Sorry, man. That was a bit much. I know. But then we get to turn 16 and we're coming out, and basically, as it looked, was they're coming out of the turn. Now, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Mir was running a little bit wide coming out of 16. Miller, I think, had kind of squared the corner off a little bit and was coming out at a shallower angle than Mir was. Our look was only down camera, down the front stretch. We see Miller look to his left once, continue off the corner, look twice off the corner, and then he rams into Mir right when the curbing runs out. Now, Mir was out on the curbs, no question about that, but they banged and banged hard at a significant amount of speed. It was a very aggressive move at that moment in time from Miller. However, the stewards then decided that they were going to look into this incident and decide if there was something needed to be done. The stewards decided that there was nothing there and it was race on, boys. So I ask you, was Miller retaliating for the move that was there? Was Miller's move dangerous? Because later on, as the race ends, both Miller and Mir have words about it on the cooldown lap. And Mir was very adamant that what Miller had done was deliberate and it was dangerous and it was stupid. Your take.
So running it wide and looking to the left can kind of be seen in two ways, whether you aimed for the guy to hit him Or that's where you were going and you were like, well, it's my lucky day. I get to take this guy. Either way, you were looking. You knew contact was coming. There is no lift, which I can't say I blame him for not, or I guess not lifting, rolling back the throttle. I think he would have got penalized if he had knocked him off his bike, which is where the gray area of stewardness comes in, right? Because he takes him off, they're going to penalize him. Well, because he only knocked him off his foot pegs, they don't penalize him. There really is no difference, in my opinion. It's the fact that Mir was, you know, strong enough to hold on. Jack doesn't have a history of doing this with people, right? I think you have to look at someone's body of work before you start doling out huge punishments. I think this definitely is a trip down to the office to have a discussion, and everybody gets put on warnings. You want to stomp this out early in the season. We don't want a feud bubbling, because as much as we love good hard racing, we don't love people running each other into the track, running each other off. That's beyond racing. And, you know, keeping these guys as level-headed as possible while you can is tough enough. Because don't, you know, make sure you understand motorcycle riders are all absolutely insane, and they just harness it right on the edge, and that's why they're so good. But these guys are crazy. These guys are all nuts. To do what they do, just like fighter pilots, they're insane. So what, anytime that something's going on at the track, I mean, just feel how you are in traffic and you start getting a little hotter in the collar because someone cut a little close. Now just imagine doing this for a living and being competitive about it, where your livelihood is on the line, and then you're also doing this with the best in the world, and it's at 200 miles per hour, give or take. So while I say it was probably not Jack's best moment, I would say that the decision to take no action at this time, as far as penalties on the race, was probably okay, but that's it. And I don't even know if they did that after the race, and Jack certainly didn't have any remorse for what he did, and that's where maybe some of the problem lies. But I think should anything even remotely close happen again involving him, then you got to sit him out, and that's where the message gets sent.
Yep. So our good friend, the man behind the scenes who makes the show actually work, Mr. Moto Lynn himself, posted on Twitter, Juan Mir made an aggressive move while trying to go forward. Jack Miller intentionally rammed another rider, which caused both to go backward. I don't think these actions are even close to the same. Lynn, I am 100% in agreement with you that these two actions are not the same. They're not whatsoever. My take on it is Miller is in the wrong. That's way beyond a line that I would be willing to play with at 200 miles an hour. So I think Miller's in the wrong. Does he need to have a long lap penalty for it? Gray area in the rule book. At first thought, I would say yes. I would throw the book at him and say, you need a long lap penalty. Now, on the flip side of that, we only had one camera view of it. I looked, I couldn't find any other views of it on the feed. I was looking for Miller on board. The feed's available. It wasn't there for me to see. What I will say is that if there's a different angle, and if Race Direction has these different angles, and they do, that maybe they saw something differently. I'm not defending Miller here. What I'm saying is that there's a different side of the coin here that potentially, because he squared the corner off, his first look is going to be to the left because he saw Mir out there and wanted to see if he was going to be able to take to cleanly get back to the racing line that he wanted to be on. Conversely, Mir is on the curbs, which he's running out of space. Everybody's going to try to push somebody off to make them back off because you want to take that line. What we don't see, and what I did not see, is whose front tire is in front of whose before the contact happens. If, and that's a big if Miller has a wheel in front of Mir, that is Miller's line. And since Mir is going to be off track, it is in his best interest to back off and let Miller have the line. However, Mir doesn't want to do that because he knows the Ducati is going to blow past him anyway in a straight line. So that could be what Race Direction saw and why they decided that no further action was there. But somebody needs to talk to both of these guys because you cannot have this festering for the rest of the season. I will now step down off the soapbox and continue the podcast. But Anyway, that was the interesting point of the race, was definitely what happened there. But by this point, Quartararo was now mounting a charge. Vinales had kind of ran out of a little bit of steam. He was just kind of there. But Quartararo started to click the laps off. Clicked them off. We had 7 laps to go, and there were 9 riders in the lead pack. That's Moto 3 territory, right? I mean, 9 guys in a lead pack legitimately had a shot to win, which is crazy. So Quartararo now starts to get on everything. Quartararo has now got past Bagnaia. Bagnaia goes wide at turn 1. It took pole out there with him. It was Martin, Zarco, Quartararo, Miller, Rins, Vinales, you know, at that lead right there. Then Quartararo made his move going into the first corners to get past the Ducks, but then the Ducks went right back in front. You know, it's the idea of corner speed versus top speed. Okay, we only have 4 laps to go. Who's got tire? Does Martin, does Zarco, do they have any tire left out? Well, basically, Vinales goes out wide at turn 16. He's pretty much done now. He's doesn't have a chance. But Quattro has now finally got himself in front using the Yamaha through the twistier sections. He's forced the move, and he's got enough in it that he's starting to stretch it just that little bit with the 3 laps to go. The other thing that helps Quattro go on to the win here is the fact that both Zarco and Martin decided not to work with each other and started to fight it out to who was going to finish second, which again let Quartararo escape to get away just enough on the straightaway so the Ducatis could not run him back down. He timed it basically perfectly. If you were going to do it, he did it with about 3 laps to go, which was a perfect place to do it. It wasn't a lot of time for anybody to think about what kind of strategy Quartararo was running or be able to think about, well, we can draft him back here or I'm going to set him back up here. The chess match was done. It was basically, hey, Quartararo threw down check, and then within 2 laps he had the checkmate. So Quartararo wins it over Zarco, and then Jorge Martin, Pramac Ducati on the podium, a Frenchman, 2 Frenchmen on the podium, and a 1-2 for Frenchman, which I don't think happened since like somewhere around, what they say, like 1960 or something like that, 1965, something.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Long time. So Martin, amazing race from the rookie, right? This is a kid in his second MotoGP race, and he winds up on pole. Do you know who else did that? Some guy named Marquez, some guy named Stoner. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? Of guys that have done that. I mean, it's an elite little list of people who have done that in MotoGP. Is Jorge Martin the next Marc Marquez? No idea, but it was a pretty amazing race by the kid. I'll give him credit for that one. He said all the right things.
I think it was an amazing weekend. Not just race. I mean, yes. Pole position, yeah. Podium, oh, yeah. Led. Yep. What did he lead? 80% of the race? Around about that?
He led 18 of 22 laps.
Yeah. So higher. 90% of the race.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. Rins was in 4th and Vinales, Bagnaia, Mir, after those problems with Miller, finished 7th. Brad Binder on the KTM with the medium front ran to 8th. He was top KTM, and he was ahead of Oliveira by 7 places and a whole lot of time about 2 seconds roughly ahead of him. That was quite the ride by Binder. You know, the former winner. Love to see what the KTMs are going to do when they get back to Europe, when they get back to tracks that we know that they excel on and with a tire that will support what they need on the front end. Espargaro was 10th, then Bastianini, Morbidelli, who shocks me that he was that far down. Espargaro had those problems in turn 1 where he ran wide a couple of times, so he wasn't able to do any better than 13th. Brado was in 14th, Oliveira 15th, Rossi 16th, not scoring a point, and the doctor looked lost, not only in the race, in qualifying, in the whole weekend. He looked terrible. So that is how the race finished off. We'll look at the championship standings real now. Championship standings real quick.
Before we do, I have a question here. I'm looking at the results, right? Mm-hmm. And they have the kilometers per hour there. Now,
yes,
that's got to be an average, right?
Correct. That's the average time. That's the average speed for the entire distance of 22 laps.
Okay. So if this is, you know, going to be a great season, it has to be, because Quartararo's average 167.4. Zarco, 167.3. Martin, 167.3. It's 167.3 all the way down to Bagnaia, 167.1 all the way down to 12th. So from first to 11th, or excuse me, to 12th, right? It's what, 0.4?
Yes.
So, kilometers per hour. So, yes, the Ducatis are blazingly fast down the straightaway. But that's why you were seeing these guys right there with them on the infield, because it's the old strength and weakness game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not every track has a long straightaway. So,
no.
Ducati is, I mean, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier. I just don't see where they're like this huge favorite right now. I know it's early, but you would think this would be the tracks if they were going to show any dominance at, because they were running it up there. And this week they had two of the non-factory bikes on the podium.
Well, time.
Oh, I guess they are factory bikes. They're not the factory bikes, right?
They are 2021 Ducatis. They're not a year old bike, but they are not in the factory team. So do they have right now? Those Pramac bikes are going to be as close in spec to the real factory bikes as they're ever going to be all season, right? Because if there's any update, it's going to go to Miller and Bagnaia first. Unless, you know, one of the Pramac guys is leading the championship.
I was just about to say, well, unless. which actually was a cool thing at the end of the race, too. Martin, when they interviewed him, they were saying, like, oh, you know, me and Zarco are out here for two different things. I'm out here to win races. He's out here to win championships. That's a big, mature statement from a 23-year-old guy coming into MotoGP to recognize that his teammate is on a different mission. And to not really, like, he was like, okay, we had a little battle, then he went by. I'm not gonna worry about getting second place. Like, okay, all right. I mean, we'll see how long that lasts, but that's actually pretty impressive that someone would think outside of the box when it comes to, I hate that phrase, why did I use it? Would, you know, be able to have that thought while racing after leading so much of the race to be like, I'll let Zarco go.
Yep. Okay. Well, you know, that... It shows the level of intelligence that Martin has. It also shows the mental capacity that he has with what he's working with, right? All of the greats, the ones that have been truly great, whether it's Formula One, whether it's MotoGP, take your pick. It could be a drag racing, anything, doesn't matter. The ones who have the spare mental capacity to analyze what's going on while they're there and do the thinking while they're driving or riding are the ones that are generally the greats. Marquez is that way. He's using 80 to 90% of his brain to ride the bike, and he's got another 10% thinking through the other parts of it. Although you could argue that he just goes for it and doesn't care, but there is something to it, right? Valentino Rossi, when he was dominant through the early part of the 2000s, he literally had spare capacity. I will never forget the interview that somebody did with Michael Schumacher. He was interviewing them at Farina, the test track for Ferrari. He had asked Michael a question. They came up, said, Michael, the car's ready. He said, excuse me. He got in the car. He did 25, 30 minutes in the car. He came back, sat down with the reporter. He repeated the question that the reporter had asked him before he got into the car and then answered it. So, I mean, this is what you have, what you see sort of in Martin, is this ability to think differently, to use his mind in a way that conserves the energy and allows him to be on point with everything else that's going around him. It's that spatial awareness part of it. And the greats all have it. So things look good for Martin. There's any possibility of things that will happen as the season goes on, but I don't think you could have asked for a better start for Martin to the season. We shall see what he does with the Ducati on a tighter, twistier track, and we'll see that when we get to Portimão.
Absolutely. So that gets us down to our championship, Jim. And that has Johann Zarco there on 40 points, leading the championship. Fabio Quartararo, courtesy of that win, has now tied his teammate for second. They're 36 points there, and they're only four back of Johann Zarco. Pecco Bagnaia is on 26 points there in fourth. Rins on 23 points in fifth. Joao Mir just 1 point behind there in sixth. And then we got Martin in seventh. Aleix Espargaró in eighth. Miller in ninth. And Pol Espargaró in 10th. I know we are definitely like using up a ton of time here, but I just wanted to just sit there and ask, do you really think that Aprilia is still a podium bike?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All
given
right.
What we've seen in the desert, they're not lacking that much in acceleration. They're not lacking that much in top end. You get them to Aragon, you get them to Portimão, Le Mans, Kimi Ring is going to be just a wild card race in general. I think it's possible, definitely. Sprinkle any kind of rain in there, and I definitely think Alesia's on a podium.
I just think there's too many good bikes in front of him, too many good riders right now.
I think the bike is closer, but it's so hard. Loads better. I think that bike is loads better than what we actually think it is.
All right.
So I'm going to be wrong anyway, so who cares, right?
Yeah. One of us is right. That's the beauty about being. You take 150, I take the other 50. One of us is going to be right.
Yes. All right. So let's quickly get into the Moto 2 deal here real quick.
We can quickly get in and quickly get out. Not much going on there. Quickly get in,
yes. Well, you know, Moto 2 is easy enough to do for that one, right? I mean, there's not too much we can do about that.
Sam Lowe show.
Where is my note? I lost my notes here, guys. Sorry. Got my notes back. All right. So Moto 2 in that QP1 session. Bobier was actually through. He went to the first. I was happy about that. That's really the only thing that's there. Verhey Dixon, Arbolino, Reynes, Navarro, they're all in that first session. You got to see what was going to go on. Arbolino was having trouble with track limits along the way, but they made it through to get out for that. In the second qualifying session, basically Lowe's walked everybody. He's just the dominant man right now. Gardner qualified second, which was much better. That at least put him on an equal footing to Lowe's. Then Bezzecchi, Fernandez, and Dixon. Iagura impressing me on the Moto 2 bike. Then DG Antono. Roberts was 8th. Kinnett 9th. And then 10th was Augusto Fernandez. Now, you realize Moto 2 is very difficult because you got Raul Fernandez and you have Augusto Fernandez. You have to keep your Fernandezes straight, which I will at some point mess up. I guarantee it. So that's was where it started out. We get into the Moto 2 race. This is not the greatest race that you're ever going to watch or witness or see. It is Moto 2. Basically, Lowe's led, from the onset of the Moto 2 race, Gardner had a good hole shot. He was there at the beginning, but then going through, he wound up getting pushed back to fourth after they came out of turn one. So Bezzecchi was leading, followed by Lowe's, Raul Fernandez, Gardner, then Augusto Fernandez and Kinnett. They're all there. I'll do that later. So then you've got Roberts that's back in 9th, Cam is in 15th, and basically the top four bikes start to pull away. So Lowe's, Gardner, Bezzecchi, and Fernandez, they're all starting to pull away from the front. That's pretty much how it goes for the race. They pull away. Roberts went down on lap 14. It was rider error. He got over the curbs and claimed that the wind gust hit him as he was out on the other side of the curb. He got on the gas, back end came out, and down he went. Now, Lowe's was working hard to be out front. The bike was not as stable as it was the weekend prior. He was definitely being hounded by Gardner at that point. Bezzecchi had fallen back to third, and that wasn't about where it was. What else? Bobier went down at turn 8. So from the middle part, you know, halfway through from lap 10 to, you know, lap 4, it's just Lowe's, Gardner, and Fernandez running around. The battle for that farther in the pack with DG Antonio, Agura, and Manzi was a pretty good fight. That was where the action was. We spent a lot of time there on camera because there was nothing going on out front. We got to the very end. Gardner tried. He tried. He tried. He tried. He tried. He did everything he could. Came up just a little bit short. 4/10. I think it was 4. Yeah, he came up a 10th. Is that the race there? He came up a 10th short for the victory. If the track had been, you know, finish line had been 100 feet farther, Gardner probably would have drafted by Lowe's. But Lowe's did win the race. He went 2-for-2, followed by Gardner. Raul Fernandez shows up on the podium. So the two KTM IO teammates are 2nd and 3rd. Bezzecchi was 4th. Iagura with a fantastic ride to put us in 5th. Augusto Fernandez, 6th. Celestino Vietti getting better every weekend on the Sky Racing VR46 and 7th. Manzi was 8th. Verhey was 9th. DG Antonio was there in 10th. Then Arbolino, Boben Schneider, Navarro, De La Porta, Arenas, Gar, and that is your top 15. Now, Arrhenius is on a Boscocuro, right? Now, we wondered about what that was, so I did some research. I figured it out. Boscocuro was a Moto2 rider when the early start of Moto2, which was in the 2010 season, was the first season of Moto2.
2009 was the first season.
2009, sorry. Mm-hmm. I was close. Memory was close.
Yep.
But I missed it by a year. But Boscocuro was a rider who rode on a speed-up motorcycle. And remember, at the very when the first Moto2 races were, speed-ups were kind of the bike to be on. And he was a rider. He's now that team manager, runs the project, and they decided this year to name the bikes after him, although technically it's nothing more than just a speed-up. So there's your answer for what that one is.
Nice. So a couple things that was insane during this race, I will say, is Lowe's and Gardner, they really looked a little bit of a step above. These guys set both their fastest lap on the last lap, and Gardner, had he not pushed the tire and lost the front end a bit in the final corner, probably could have drafted him to the win. It was just that small bit of pushing over the limit which cost him the win eventually. That was impressive by those two to be able to take worn tires and then run fastest laps at the lap record pace, mind you, is very impressive considering the track conditions weren't ideal again because of the wind, and you could see it in Sam's bike. And it was a tale of two races for both of them. Sam got out early. Remy had a bit of that bad start, right? And they kind of met in the middle. You could see it where Remy's performance of catching back up, right, and Sam overriding the bike met. And so Remy caught him, but then Sam started to pull away again because now Sam collected himself, and then Remy had burned up his tires a little bit to gain back. And then the race naturally progressed at the end. It brought them closer together like magnets as well, because then Remy got into his groove and Sam had been on the edge of his tires setting quick lap after quick lap. These guys are going to provide some magical races this season. Fernandez is going to be the sauce in there that really spices it up. And then Bezzecchi will be the sprinkles on top, makes it just a little bit extra. Not sure if he's going to be the show, but he's definitely there. Something else to note for all of our American listeners and especially Bobier fans, he crashed, yes, but he did that after setting the fifth fastest lap of the race. So Cam is pushing it and learning, and that's all we're going to want this season. A win this season would be out of question. A podium would be ridiculous. Top five would be miraculous, and a top 10 would be expected. And for him to go out and already be, you know, testing, pushing limits, he's going to figure it out. I mean, Cam is a racer. So I say that with a bit of bias because he's, you know, a California boy. I've, you know, watched him grow up out here. Actually know him personally, for full disclosure. But that's exciting to see from Cam as well.
Yep. I there's nothing wrong with what he's doing so far. The talent, the cream is definitely those top four guys, right? They are the guys that are going to set the standard. Gardner versus Lowe's for the whole season is going to be spectacular. There's no doubt about that. I think you're going to see a lot more races like the one we had. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, these guys are at the front. They're going to be tooling around. They're eventually going to pull the pin, break away from everybody. And somebody like Fernandez or Bezzecchi is going to have their day when they're just that little bit better than Lowe's and Gardner. And like I said, they'll mix it up. I'll throw Agüero in there as a wild card as to getting a podium somewhere in this. Don't know when it would happen, but it's definitely going to be an interesting Moto2 season. So should we get to the actual nutter of the weekend? Should we get to the Moto3 thing? Because
did we do Moto2 championship?
Oh, no, sorry. I did not do Moto2 championship.
I'll just roll through that.
Roll through it.
So Sam Lowe's collecting all of the points available so far on 50. Remy Gardner, they're 10 points behind on 40. Rael Fernandez, 13 points back there in 27th with Rael. And then we got Marco Bezzecchi, 26 points. And then in fifth place, Fabio DiGiantonio there on 22 points. Celestino Viette, he's there in 13th. And then Augusto Fernandez on 12 points. Give us our top seven. Agüero, Ben Schneider, and Joe Roberts rounding out the top 10. All right, on to
the nutter.
The nutter, the one where even though I didn't take any notes, it was impossible to take notes anyway, so I don't feel so bad about this one.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You shouldn't really, because this race is... I have been around motorcycle racing for 39 years, and I've never seen anything like what happened in this race.
Well, honestly,
just to be clear,
me and Jim talk, of course, outside the show, but on race weekends, we really don't text each other that much because we're on different time zones, we're on different schedules, we don't want to spoil anything. And the minute I was up watching Moto 3, I finished, I shot Jim a text, "Have you seen Moto 3? He probably knew right then and there. He's like, "Oh shit, this must be good."
Must be, because I do it. I'm like, because I was like, I heard the text back like, "No, haven't watched it yet. Still doing qualifying," because I was behind because of other things, because of driving home from vacation. So I'm like, wow, I got to see this one. But let's get through qualifying very, very quickly. In Moto 3 qualifying, Foggia, Fernandez, Minho, Anshu, Artigas, and Sasaki are in that first group, right? Basically, Anshu falls off, and Minho, Foggia, Artigas, and Dupasquier all go through to the next section. Now, what you need to understand, now look at what, let me get through QP2 real quick. So QP2, halfway through, we had Minho, Garzo, Guevara, and Antonelli. Antonelli, and who the Moto 3 guy, Antonelli did not sound right. Sorry. Then Acosta, and then Rodrigo. The Petronas boys were not there yet. They had to step up their game. We hadn't seen anything out of Bender, hadn't seen anything out of McPhee. But as it wound out for qualifying, Masia would take the pole, followed by Garcia, Alcobo, Rodrigo, Suzuki. That doesn't seem right to me. Is that right? That's right. They just seemed like it wasn't correct there. Because yes, it was Rodrigo, Suzuki, Minho. Bender was seventh, McPhee and Acosta, foundering out your top three rows. Now, what's important to understand is that because of some bad riding tactics in FP3, Foggia, Guerrera, Acosta, Anshu, Rossi, Fanati, Nepa all received a penalty to start from the pit lane. So it's a shuffled grid. You take out those guys, and they're going to start from the pit lane. That is important to understand at this point. Lights go green for the race. It is Rodrigo, Bender, Suzuki, Masia, and Artigas out front. Then Bender gets to the front. Basically, it's Bender, it's Salach, it's Suzuki, Toba. It's a battle royale that is happening between basically those guys. The front pack is just swapping it up. Again, we had the headwind on the front stretch, so the draft was ultra critical, and that draft was just moving everybody around. Literally, but with 12 laps to go in an 18-lap race, it had become a barroom brawl for who was going to be at the front. We had gone, what, six wide in a turn one? Probably in there somewhere, at least twice by my count we had there. Then you had Rodrigo's brake lever, the little safety catch that is on the front of the motorcycle to stop a crash happening. He hits it, it flips that up, and Bender still somehow is able to like collapse Rodrigo's brake lever, where he stands the bike up and almost flips it over on the front stretch at what, 160 miles an hour, something close to that. Somehow it gets saved. So there's the first part of chaos that had stopped, because now it isn't a barroom brawl anymore. It's become a knife fight. That is the only way to describe it. You know, we went from brawl to knife fight, and we still got 10 laps to go. This 10 lap, the middle part, the middle five laps of this race is the calmest that this race is going to be for the whole time. It's Bender kind of leads most of the way there. Salach stays with him. Rodrigo is there. Minho is there. Toba is there. Masia, Sasaki, McPhee has started to move up to get towards the front. And then you had an Alcoba there. So you had Masia go in, and they're all eight wide going into turn one. Eight wide riders going into turn one. I could get on the soapbox about you can't use the pit lane exit as part of the racetrack, but they were over there. It was crazy. Literally, Masia is in the AstroTurf going across the racetrack there by the pit wall. He never lets off. How he stays straight, I don't know. How on earth that nobody else hit him, and how they figured out how to get into turn one every time was still crazy to me. Like, I can't fathom that that was actually done. Literally, you had to watch the race with your through your fingers, because you're covering your eyes, because you can only imagine there's going to be some massive pileup the way these guys are just weaving all over the place on the front stretch. Binder would go from first to like 14th in turn one with 8 laps to go. That's the idea of the crazy that we had, because that was seriously, the knives were out then. No one was giving an inch. It was truly crazy, truly crazy. Alcoba, he went to the front for a little bit. Artigas went down with Tatai. He was helped by Tatai. Tatai definitely put him down. It was a bit ambitious, but that happens sometimes in racing. Then Salash went down in turn two. Sasaki did take him down. There was definitely some incident there. And we just want to be sure. Okay, so that was with 6 laps to go. And with 5 to go, it now becomes, we threw the knives away. It became a straight up gunfight at this point. Minho was out front. Tobo was right there. McPhee and Binder were sort of working together. They had blasted by Rodrigo and Alcoba. And then we get going into the 4 laps to go. Binder drafts by for the lead, and then Alcoba is late on the brakes. He nips in there, and he hits McPhee and takes McPhee out. It's a big, bad crash. Literally.
Well, he didn't necessarily hit McPhee. His bike hit the ground, and then it came up and smacked McPhee in the head.
that's a better way to put it, yeah. It is definitely great. McPhee is not happy about this whatsoever. He runs over to Alcoba. Alcoba's trying to say, hey, but, you know, sorry, hands up, mea culpa kind of thing. And McPhee kind of gig into a tussle. There's some kicking exchanged. You know, it's just, well, okay, that's all going on. Then, whoa, hey, Tatai and Fernandez are down again at turn 6. So this is the second time Tatai has helped somebody to fall off.
That man is racking up points on his license like no other right now.
They're
going to sit him out by the third round, I swear to God.
he needs some help. But again, this is the gunfight that this race had become. Now, the top 5 is starting to pull away, and it is only now. Let's kind of rewind just a little bit. The whole time that all this crazy is going on out front, the Magnificent 7 that started from pit lane have been chipping away at the lead. Now, I don't think anybody thought that they were going to do very much. They might get there, but they're going to either use up their tires or not. But there was one man who shone through. Suddenly, with less than 5 laps to go, the Pedro Acosta, the rookie who starts from pit lane, has showed up at the front of the pack. These top 5 guys are now starting to pull away a little bit. Please realize that Acosta had started in pit lane, and he was running 3rd. Then Acosta just blew by into the lead. Like, he had caught the front pack. He was 9 seconds behind the leaders at the end of the first lap. And this kid, this brace-faced kid, all of 16, has suddenly took the lead of the race. Not only does he take the lead, he starts to pull away from everybody. In fact, he leads it to the rest of the way, and he wins the race pulling away. He wins the race. Acosta starts in pit lane, is almost 10 seconds behind the leaders at the end of the first lap, races his way through the pack, and wins. Hands down, most amazing thing I have seen in a motorcycle race in the 39 years I've been following it. I saw Nicky Hayden when he was 8 ride a 65cc motorcycle without putting his feet down on a half mile and rode it on balance all the way around. I thought that was amazing. I stood at Weir Cycle Jam in Indianapolis and saw Josh Hayes on a Team Hammer Suzuki spin a motorcycle 360 degrees in the rain across the drag strip where they put the stuff down to make the dragsters have the really, really good traction, but it becomes incredibly slick with like even an ounce of water. I saw that, thought that was incredible. I thought seeing Mark Marquez start dead last in a Moto 3 race and win it was incredible, but I have never seen anything like what Acosta did with that in that race. Never. Even Dylan Gray and David Emmett were beside themselves. They had no words for what anybody had just seen. And the cool part was you get to the pit lane interviews, and there's this 16-year-old kid with braces, and he's just like, well, I just did my best today, and I had a really good team. He's not even flustered. He's not jumping down. He's kind of excited, but you would expect this 16-year-old to be just like, you know, that kind of crazy happy when you ask a girl to the homecoming dance, and she says yes, you know? And
you
he's
know,
not. He's
you know
just calm.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Lorenzo. The way that he talks, it's like, yeah. Well, obviously he has the same slang to him for his ESL, right? He's like, I do good, no? Right? Like, Lorenzo always used to ask like a question, like, kind of like question, like what he would say. But the line that got me is like, you know, when you work with the best team, you expect the best results kind of thing. And I was like, oh, my man is not lacking confidence. That's for sure.
No.
That's a scary combination. Skill, confidence, and to go out there and put it on the field like that.
It was his very first win. It'd be different if he had won a race before, right?
Dude, oh, this kid is scary,
this is
man.
This is how you win your first race. I mean, he's a Moto Red Bull Rookies champion, right? I get that. He's obviously talented. I'm not denying it, but that is beyond that. That's even more crazily impressive than when Anshu,
just getting ready to say, let's have him break that curse real quick, though, right? Let's have him do it more than once.
Exactly. That was in the rain, that was crazy, right? The older, they're twins, but.
Yeah. So that makes.
The other Anshu.
So in Moto 3, probably the three craziest rides we've seen have all been the Red Bull KTM IO. You've got, right? Pedro Acosta coming out of pit lane to get the win. You got Kian Anshu showing up in the last race of the season in the rain to win going away by seconds, right?
Yes.
Yep. Brad Binder winning from dead last.
Yep.
All Moto 3, all KTM IO. Something about that team and that bike, they're just making magic, dude.
Oh, no. That literally is one of those races that you show your friends. And when they say, well, why are you spending the time watching Moto 3? They're just guys that are just learning. No, you need to watch this because it is literally the best racing you're going to see. I have no idea what this Acosta kid is going to do when we get to Portimao or any place else. But I guarantee you, the kid never saw the track until he showed up. He'd never raced there. I get it. You had a couple of days of testing. You had a whole race weekend followed by another race weekend after that, right? I don't care. That was still one of the most impressive debut wins I have ever seen. Bar none, that was absolutely pure magic when it happened. And he's just so cool, calm, collected about it, which just shocks me. And he's like you said, a good team expects good results, and I provided one. Oh, boy, is that like the understatement of 2021. I'm like, wow, crazy. I mean, watch it again, guys. If you haven't seen it, please watch it again. I'm going to watch it again sometime this week because it's just that good.
Right. All right, so that brings us to our Moto 3 championship. Pedro Acosta, courtesy of that win and his podium last weekend, is leading the championship there on 45 points. Darren Binder is there on 36 points in second place. Joan Macia is in third with 32 points. Nicola Antonelli in fourth on 26, followed by Aizen Guevara. Then we have...
Hold it right there. We would all be talking about Guevara if it wasn't for Acosta. Because Guevara's a rookie that looks really great, too.
I mean, it's true. And he's on that gas, right?
Well, it's a KTM.
Yeah, it's a KTM. Let's be real, right? Just like when we had the Husqvarnas.
Yeah, exactly. But still, you would be talking about Guevara because he's damn good, too.
He is. Yep. So Toba in sixth. Rodrigo there in seventh. Sergio goes to eighth. Andrea Migno in ninth. and Tatsuki Suzuki there in 10th. Now, what's crazy about Moto3 is that we know, I think, out of this list here, I think Darren Binder is still probably the scariest dude. We
agreed.
Pedro Acosta is threatening for sure. We don't know enough, but we know Binder is there all season long, right?
Masia will be there all season long.
And yeah, Masia, if he has, he's already starting off strong, which is better than last year. He didn't have a strong start last year, so new team, maybe better. Everybody else here, I don't know. So I think we're going to filter it out real quick in Moto3, just like we did Moto2, though. Even though the racing is close, I still think there's some guys here that are definitely that cut above. And just from what I've seen from Binder this year, I just, this is it. This is his last Moto3 year, championship or not, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, got to be. You know, what we always
I mean
say
that, of course, going up, not out.
Sure, right. The thing that we always talk about is we always say, well, you know, all the talent left and went to Moto2. Well, who's going to be the new guy? Moto2 never disappoints to find some other young kid who is absolutely amazing, who shows up and literally just blows our doors off of what talent they have. There is a tremendous pipeline of kids that are amazing, that are coming through the Spanish National Series and making a massive impression on the world stage. I mean, it's just incredible.
There's always the next guy. We watched Rossi do this for years, and we said we'll never see this again. And then Marc Marquez comes out of nowhere, right? There's going to be somebody else that does it. In Formula One, we had Schumacher. Like, this is unbelievable through the 2000s. No one's ever going to come do this. Lewis just about has all his records now, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's kids that are looking at, they're growing up right now looking at how Lewis did it. They're going to break all his records eventually, too. We keep thinking it's not possible, and these guys show us that it is. Someone's going to come along. Now, whether it's a Costa kid or there's a kid 10 years from now who just, you know, opened his eyes in the delivery room, we don't know. But it's insane that these guys can still get faster on motorcycles. It's crazy that there's still track records out there from, like, 2015, right? And it just shows you how fast it's been for how long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always worry that, man, we're not going to have any good racing in Moto3, and I don't know why, because I get, you know, the talent leaves, world champions move up, guys that move up along the way, and and whatnot, and I always think, oh man, what's going to happen, man? Oh, is this going to be a boring race? No, never. Just throw that out of your mind. It's always going to be great racing in Moto3, because there's always that next set of talent coming.
I think where maybe that mindset would actually be accurate is Moto2. And the reason being, it's not a lack of talent. It's the talent takes that extra step. And anyone who is at the top in Moto2 is at the very least a low-level MotoGP rider. And to be there, you're 1%. So you might be able to make it into Moto2, but that's why you see so many guys hit that grind, and that's it. That's the stopping point. It's so hard in that series, and that's where you see the boring racing, because you have to be one of those top four guys, and when they do actually get pulled out of Moto2, you can see a talent gap go back in that series, because it's so hard and it takes so much experience or such a special talent to rise to the top of there. You could be in Moto2 forever, and that doesn't make you a better rider. Go ask Tom Luthi. Right.
Yeah, I was gonna say you gotta think of Luthi in that situation.
Marcel Schroeder. I mean, these guys have been in this series for years, and they're going backwards, and it's because they hit a peak, a plateau, right? But they are far from terrible riders. It's just so competitive. It's insane how hard it is to make it there. It was a qualifying 1 second from 1st to 14th place. 1 second.
Yep. The other thing that doesn't work in your favor is what? There's 30 Moto3 bikes on the grid. There's 25, 26 Moto2 bikes on the grid. There's 22 MotoGP rides. There are less bikes available to you as you go farther up the grid. So you have to wean the talent off and take the ones that truly impress you or show you something. So it's like Formula One. There's only 24 seats in Formula One World Championship. That's a really coveted thing. It's that way in some sports too, right? The NHL, there are only There's 31 teams in the NHL, in the National Hockey League. There are basically only 62 guys who play goalie in there. That's a small percentage, right? It's just, and then even to be a starting goaltender or the number one goaltender, there's only 31 of those guys. It's the same thing. It just happens everywhere. It just depends on the sport. You know, the same could be said for soccer, right? You could say the same.
Yeah, goalkeepers, power forwards. I mean, in football, there's 18 quarterbacks, right? So,
sure.
And of which 8 are considered like top NFL, and the rest are like trying to make it or they don't. I mean, so yeah, pro sports are hard, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why me and Jim are not pro athletes.
Exactly.
So we got phased out in our sports long ago.
Yes, we did. And
money, talent, whatever. Take your pick. Take your pick.
All three.
Didn't happen. Didn't happen. Genetics, whatever you want. But and that's why, you know, these guys are insane in what they do, and we appreciate it. And that's why we are so glad to have racing back, so we can sit here and talk about it. You just gotta love it, Jim. And we're off to a great start this season, and it's only looking like the stories are just getting started, and we have so much to see and do this season.
Yep, we do. With that, I think we should get out of here, my friend.
That's right. All right, so we're going to have the next round, and we don't have to wait too long. It's going to come on here on the weekend of the April 18th, and that's going to be at Portimao. I think that's surely become, you know, one of me and Jim's most favorite tracks across all motorsports. It's a wonderful venue. We can't wait to get there and see some action. And remember, folks, if you want to email us in, again, just like our friend Gary Chavit did it. And again, thank you, Gary, for writing in. Definitely kick the show off with the right tempo. You can write us at motopod@motopodcast.com. And then for Facebook, we're at facebook.com/motopod. And then, of course, at Twitter, we are at @moto_pod. On Twitter, Instagram, I can be found at SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
At MotoRGV, Instagram and Twitter.
Perfect. All right. So I hear my son is having a fit in the background. It's definitely time for me to get the heck out of here, because I'm pretty sure my wife is tired of him. He is starting to teeth, Jim, and
grows up fast.
Yes, yes, they do. And he's actually a little early for it, which of course he would be, because why would he have a good week of just chilling out and hanging with me? No, he's the fuss ball, man. So I'm gonna go handle that. You sir, go get some rest, and I'll catch you on the next one.